The heart is so sensitive, right? The feminine heart is so sensitive that, like, moment by moment, if the masculine presence drops or goes into, like, selfish, you know, lust, or, you know, like, in any way, like, lost in his, in their consciousness, it's not going to be safe to surrender. So you shouldn't, right? But if there is that constant kind of, like, the breath, there's like a constant breath of surrender and trustability, right? If that's there, moment by moment by moment, like, that journey is a beautiful one.
You're listening to the Femme Codes podcast, a sacred space for your erotic embodiment and sensual empowerment. Here I share the codes for leading radical women into their highest expressions of self, into leading turned on, orgasmic lives. Welcome to another episode of the Femme Codes podcast. So today's episode, I'm joined by Alan McGrath Isbell. And Alan is a coach who specializes in masculine training and the art of men's work. He is also a polarity mentor. So this episode is packed full of juicy goodness and many topics around polarized relating, conscious relating, intimacy, and men's masculinity and men's work. So in this episode, I made sure to ask questions that were a little bit provocative and can often also be confusing in the world that we see of polarity, because oftentimes a lot of us enter into this world of polarity, conscious relating, and polarized relationships with little embodiment to truly know the truth of the work. And it can all look very enticing and also sometimes confusing because there are a lot of different teachings out there. So my intention is, by having different guests on this podcast who have embodied relationships with these polarized teachings, is that we really create a space where we understand polarity on a deeper level and really create a personal relationship to this in our own lives that allow us to connect deeper and breathe more love, connection, intimacy, and safety with those that we relate with, and also to ourselves. Let's not also forget that the absolute blessing of this work is we get to bring the sexual aspect of ourselves into the light, and we get to liberate a very, very powerful part of ourselves through this work. Polarity is definitely seen as the art of sexual attraction, but in my personal opinion, it goes so much deeper than that. But again, it is one of the absolute beautiful blessings of this work. In my own experience, this art of polarity and these teachings have created a space where the sex and these relationships have become such a transformative portal into really deepening ourselves and deepening pleasure, deepening the spice, deepening every facet that you could possibly experience in a sexual moment to its fullest potential. It really brings the God into the bedroom. It really brings source into sex. It really brings divinity and the sacred into any sexual moment. And as well as that, it creates this beautiful magnetism, which often we wonder why we lose this in relationships or why we lose that sexual spark. And I truly believe that polarity is one of the keys to keeping the spark alive, no matter how long you have been in a space of relationship for. So without further ado, let's jump in. So I just wanted to start with, basically, I love knowing how people first come into this work. You know, how did you come into studying and journeying in the realm of being a coach and in the realm of specifically relationships, polarity, intimacy? What was your journey to get here?
Yeah. So I got started about 8 years ago. And I was a young man, and I just felt like something was missing in my life. And somehow I connected it to masculinity. And so I sought out a mentor. I didn't really know what I was looking for. I didn't know what men's work was. I didn't know what embodiment work was. I'd been practicing meditation for some time and yoga for some time. But I just felt like something was missing in my life related to masculinity, in particular, like positive male role models. And so I sought that out, and I came across a workshop called like the Men's Initiation Workshop. And I had to be there. So I went, and I have not stopped since that first workshop. I've just pretty much dedicated myself to men's work and how the embodiment portion of men's work applies to relationship polarity, masculine feminine dynamics. And it's been 8 years that the man who ran that first workshop became my mentor. I worked with him for 5 years, 6 years, and have, it made such an impact in my life that I was just pulled eventually. I didn't really mean to. I didn't mean to become a coach. I actually resisted that for a long time. But I just was invited into leadership, and slowly people started to come to me for help. And because it's so important to me and my personal growth, and I invest so much into it with my time and energy and money, it became this thing that just seemed so natural to like share with other people. And so that's what I do.
Beautiful. Yeah. I read, I don't know where it was. I think it was on your site, and it said that you'd been practicing since you were 16, which is super young to get into, I feel anyway, meditation. How come you started so young with that?
You know, I was lucky. I think I actually first experienced it even earlier through my mom. She would have my sister and I like listen to these guided meditation tapes, and so I just was exposed to it early on. And I think I had a friend introduce it to me in high school, and I had like formal meditation sitting, and it impacted me so much. And I felt like it was so much cooler than drugs or alcohol or kind of anything else that was at my disposal. I had some pretty profound experiences my first few times practicing. And so I just was like, what is this? And I, you know, started Googling it and researching it, and found basic, you know, mindfulness practice, and just started doing it. And that kind of led me on a journey of, you know, being like a closet yogi throughout my school years. And that's really what I was interested in. And it made such an impact on me. I just felt like there was so much more depth in my being and how I related to other people, and just recognized that it was profound. And so I just kept at it.
Yeah, I feel that. I think that it's definitely got a very untouched depth that many think that they need through external stimulation and sources and partying and drugs and all the things that's really common in, you know, mainstream culture. But really, it takes you so much deeper than that, and you avoid all of the negative effects of it as well. Definitely brings you into a different state. So where have you found that your journey has gone with, I guess, because this podcast is all about the feminine. Well, it was initially, it's not so much anymore. I'm bringing some male-based guests on and more masculinity teachers, because it is such an important part. Like we can't live without one or the other. We need both yin and yang, feminine, masculine. So where has your journey so far been with the feminine in this work of polarity and intimacy? What have you found has been your journey around that in relation to it, both within yourself and externally?
Well, let's define what we mean by the feminine.
Yeah.
So in your question, what do you mean by it?
Both in lovers, like the energetic feminine in lovers, and in yourself. So emotions and in dating.
Okay, cool.
As well.
Yeah, great. So like the feminine energy that is in everything. Because it's, you know, I think it's important to define our language. I think a lot of people these days are, you know, finding these kinds of teachings and then just like throwing words around, and then people get, you know, confused, and then it's misused. And I like to be clear. So, you know, the practice of meditation really at its essence is a really masculine one. So the early on, like learning to just be with my, you know, feminine, be with the sensations, the emotions, the things that are arising and passing in my body, in my awareness, was profound. It was like, oh, I can like witness these things and not identify with them. Like that's a profound experience that changed how I related to my own thoughts and feelings and created more identification with my masculine, and like created that, it grew that muscle, which translates, right? It translates into how I relate to myself and then externally. And, you know, I think the feminine is something that's always changing. So how we relate to it changes moment by moment. I suppose the practices that I've been trained in, the things that I've sort of been working on these last 8 years or so, have allowed me to reach a deeper level of intimacy with, I think that's really the purpose of all this stuff, mm-hmm. right? Like masculine and feminine dynamics, it's the only point is to create intimacy, to create like a depth of connection between, you know, what I call me and what I call you, right? This experience of two people. And that's what it's done. It's allowed me to like experience greater intimacy.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful. So just for our listeners that also might not know what exactly masculine and feminine energetics are, yeah. how would you put it in your own words and sort of how you've sure. embodied and traveled and journeyed with them so far?
Sure. So we've already kind of touched on the feminine. The feminine, in my view, is everything that you can see. Mm-hmm. and feel and touch and taste. It's the world. It's everything around us and in us. It's anything that changes. And the masculine is like the space that all of that occurs in. And almost like the feminine could be like a star, and the masculine is the space around that star, or the space between stars. Like if there was only star and no space, you wouldn't know what a star was, right? If there was no star and there was only space, like there'd be nothing, right? And so at its essence, the masculine is more nothing. Like it's more identified with no thing. Like, at, you know, in meditation, like you get down to a place where there really is, like there's a lot occurring, but you can touch this place where there's nothing happening at all. And that's the masculine, like that awareness, pure awareness. The feminine is everything that occurs in that awareness. It's light, it's love, it's sensation. And these things we call, you know, we call them masculine and feminine. You can call them whatever you want. They make up everything. And they have certain characteristics and certain qualities that we've kind of noticed, right? Like the feminine is bright and shiny and full and changing and shining and moving, whereas the masculine is more still and empty and piercing, right? Directive. And how those things show up in any living creature is what we're talking about, right? So how those energies show up in you is going to be different than how they show up in me, right? Like a woman, most of the time, will have more feminine energy, right? But that doesn't mean she doesn't have those masculine characteristics, masculine energy within her as well, and vice versa. Really, they don't have anything to do with gender. I think is an important thing to define. Like it, most people think masculine, they think men, or they think feminine, they think woman. But that's not necessarily what we're talking about. We're talking about characteristics, right? The qualities of masculinity, or the masculine, the qualities of the feminine. And that's, in my last few years, I've sort of trended more towards that, because it can be really useful to create that the kind of intimacy that people really want, right? To unearth the kind of conditioning that so many of us have put on to our masculinity or onto our femininity. And the confusion that surrounds that, like clearing that stuff away allows for intimacy, allows for connection to happen. And that's ultimately what I think we all really want, like to experience a deep intimacy with ourselves and the people that we're relating with.
Mm. Absolutely, because it first comes from ourselves, right? The relationship that we have to ourselves is going to influence everything around us. I definitely feel that. And I love how you touched on how the energetics show up differently, like the energies will show up differently in you and in me, because it's true. It's like how we choose to express ourselves and how that energy comes through us will be different. Hence why, you know, one woman will express her femininity in one way, and then another woman or someone with a feminine essence will express that in a different way.
Yeah, absolutely.
I also feel in this work of like the masculine and feminine, some of the teachings do get very like strayed and misconstrued, and mm-hmm. they get a little bit twisted, and that's okay mm-hmm. because we're all humans and we've all got our own definitions and how we express them. I hear a lot that there's the teaching of like, you know, the feminine is to surrender and then the masculine is to lead. And there's a lot of, what's the word that I'm looking for? Stigma is not it. It's like a lot of battling between that from people.
Yeah.
People yeah. very much can often disagree with it. Why do you think mm-hmm. that this is?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons.
Mainly I hear it from women as well, quite a lot.
Yeah. You don't hear it so much from men, the pushback on it. But I think probably one of the main reasons is that it's really easy to, well, let's just like point out the fact that women have been at the negative end of surrender for a long time. Right, they've been dominated in a way that is not caring or compassionate or loving or kind. Right, they've been at the hands of violent act, like men taking on what was the term you used, like direction or
lead.
Yeah, right. Men taking the lead, you know, in a way that is entirely selfish, that has no sensitivity to the impact of their action. Right. And that is, I mean, that happens still to this day, right? It's not just something in the past, that happens to this day. And I would say probably every woman alive has experienced that firsthand, right? So when someone like me comes around and says, it's a pretty blissful experience for somebody who's choosing to be in the feminine to surrender to the direction of somebody who's choosing to be in the masculine, it can bring up a lot, right? It can bring up all those times when that experience was not sensitive and compassionate and ultimately for openness, ultimately for love, ultimately for connection. It was for like selfish gratification, right?
Mm.
And so that's not what I'm talking about by any stretch of the imagination, which is why so often when I talk about those things, I'll say like, this is only for a relationship that is safe. Like everybody is on equal ground. There's no better than, worse than. It's respectful. It's sensitive. It's caring. It's like deeply connected to each other moment by moment. So because that stuff is so empty, right? I've experienced it, right? Like I'm a man, and I like to be in my deep surrender is delicious. But it's so vulnerable, right? We're just opening our heart to the direction of somebody else. So that person better fucking have our best interest in mind, right? And I think most women have not actually experienced that, sadly. And in fact, have experienced quite the opposite. So when some fucker on Instagram says, you know, women should surrender or something like that, like, of course they're going to get the middle finger. But I think there's nuance that's missed.
Mm. Mm. Yeah. Even when I kind of first heard the teaching as well, I was sort of a little bit resistant to it, the whole like kind of work. I was like, I was drawn to it and I was like, this feels real. Right. This feels aligned. This feels something that I'm meant to be doing and playing in.
Sure.
And mm-hmm. there was a lot of resistance to it. because it's hard, you know, like there's a lot of walls and there's a lot of shielding. There's a lot of armor even around the heart, I find, and a lot of even my own clients and women that I've worked with. There is a lot of borders because it's how we've learned to protect ourselves. And of course, it's going to sound really just not appealing to really journey.
Yeah.
And even in my own relationships, I found that when I've actually let that down and I've really pulled away the armor from my heart and I've trusted and I've trusted, and I've gone a layer deeper than before, what has come from that has been fullness. It has been a deeper state of love. It has been a deeper state of polarity. There's been more attraction. There's been more trust in that. And that's been really beautiful to see and to come from. Well, I didn't trust this at first, and I didn't trust because of my own perspectives of one, relationships and the masculine. And now to go to the other end of that and experience that has been such a deep shift, and what it's brought. It's been, absolutely magical. Yeah.
And I think just to add one piece to that, there's a lot of men who don't trust that experience as well.
Oh, yes. Like, I'd love to hear about that.
Well, so we can talk about it from the masculine perspective and from the feminine perspective as far as which role they're taking. It's incredibly difficult for a man or a more masculine being to be in the feminine. As far as like the feminine states that are more vulnerable, like, I mean, surrender is like on the far end of the vulnerability spectrum, right? But even just showing emotion, right? Just bearing their heart is a difficult thing for men, you know, and there's a lot of reasons for that, which we can, you know, go into, but we don't have to right now. But on the other side, if they're taking the masculine stance in that dance of surrender and, you know, guidance, most men don't trust themselves to do that well. Like, because it takes a deep sense, like I said, like a deep sensitivity to the other person. Like, you have to actually be more aware of their heart than you are your own. And so you have more aware of their body than you are your own. And most men are not that sensitive, they're not that practiced. And so, like, to be in like a truly loving state of, you know, what we might like in the kink would be like the dom, right? Like the person who's in the more dominant power position, like that's a fucking stance. That's a posture that you have to hold really well. And most men don't trust themselves to hold that well. Or we might even just say that they probably can't hold it that well. Like they just haven't had the practice, the training, that like the layers of their heart that have to be fucking washed away so they can really hold that kind of thing meticulously, like with so much heart and love and care and fierceness and commands. Like most men don't trust themselves to take that lead. And so I think a lot of people are walking around thinking they have an idea of what we're talking about when we say things like that, but they haven't really experienced it. Like it hasn't really been felt fully in the body, because whether you're a man or a woman, to surrender fully is a delicious thing. It's so opening. It's like, you know, it's like take everything. Take everything. Like it's yours, right? That's a beautiful thing. You know, it's like what religion is asked for, right? It's like a monk or a nun is like, take everything. Like it's not mine. Like that's a deeply spiritual thing almost. And that's not the way most people are interpreting it, right? And I don't think that's the way most people experience it, but it it is possible and it's available to each of us. So, absolutely.
And that's where the embodiment piece does come in, right? Even when I first started the work, I was like, yeah, just keep your heart open, it's fine, it's easy. You get into a point of conflict and you're like, habitual closure. Mm-hmm. So it is that like continual practice to open and open again. And it does sound easy on paper, it really does. You watch things and you listen to coaches and you listen to teachers.
It's not.
But you really go into the practice of it and it's like, bang, habitual movements over and over again.
Over and over.
Yeah. So for the feminine in surrender, could you give for our listeners that might not know what it looks like, what that might look like? And on the other end of that, you're saying that, you know, it is very difficult for men to sometimes lead and to be in that space.
Yeah.
Possibly some, I guess, recommendations or what you would recommend men might do in taking a first step into getting to that space of really holding that pose. Because I've even even switched, right, for a masculine being to go into the feminine. Mm-hmm. And you can bring in like the realm of like kink and BDSM again, right? It is very vulnerable, especially in things like Shibari, to be like, I've had in my own experiences to have someone who is primarily masculine to be in the feminine, and for them to really just rest into that can be very difficult. And same for, mm-hmm. you know, the feminine, even just being in the feminine can be very difficult. Mm-hmm. So I'd love to hear if you've got any musings on that.
Yeah. So the first piece on feminine surrender, there really is no, this is what it looks like, right? It just, there's no like thing to do. It's a moment by moment, like kind of like I said a moment ago, like trusting on the other person's part more than your own. So like, surrendering your idea about what should happen or not happen, or surrendering is like a control. It's like a letting go, like a deep, deep letting go and receiving the moment, right? Like a receiving the moment into you. And that could look like anything, right? I think there are images that make it, to kind of animate it, like Shibari is a great one, right? Shibari is a really obvious kind of display of masculine and feminine. Mm-hmm. But on a more energetic or like yogic level, feminine surrender is like, it's almost like being a yes to anything, being a yes moment by moment with your heart. Like, not, maybe not in anything is the poor choice of words. A yes to this moment, like a yes to this moment, and then a yes to this moment, and a yes to this moment. All the while, like, you know, you're playing at a pretty high level when you're working with this kind of stuff. So it's important to recognize that like, just because you're in the feminine, you're practicing surrender, it doesn't mean you have to fucking surrender to everything. Like, if it doesn't feel good, or it's not right, or like, you know, the person who's in the masculine loses sensitivity or consciousness, like, fucking let them know, you know, or say, or stop, or enough, or, you know, like, that's why safe words and things like that are also important, because, you know, we're playing at the edge when we're working with this kind of stuff. It's not just like, oh, I'm in the feminine, so whatever the masculine says goes. It's like, no, fuck that. Because is he trustable in that moment? If not, then fucking don't. You know what I mean? Like, don't do what they're saying. And that's where it gets so, you know, kind of, that's where you have to be in a really, you don't have to, but the dynamic between the two is so important, because for the feminine to surrender, she has to be in a trustable container. She has to, because we're talking about, which is kind of easier, but could go either way, right? He could surrender his heart, she could surrender her heart. The heart is so sensitive, right? The feminine heart is so sensitive that, like, moment by moment, if the masculine presence drops or goes into like selfish, you know, lust, or, you know, like in any way, like, lost in their consciousness, it's not going to be safe to surrender. So you shouldn't, right? But if there is that constant kind of, like, the breath, there's like a constant breath of surrender and trustability, right? If that's there moment by moment by moment, like, that journey is a beautiful one. And how that looks is really up to you and the kind of art that you want to make. But I think it's important to say that, like, it's not just, okay, you're practicing surrender, so you should just, you know, be like water and just do anything. It's like, it's not like that at all. It's your surrender. You're actually, if you do that, you're not serving your partner. We could say that. Like, if you're not willing to, like, be responsive to the moment. So, for example, if a woman was in her feminine and she wants to surrender to her masculine partner's guidance, and she feels him drop his presence, like all of a sudden he's thinking about lunch, or he's, you know, like just he's lost his consciousness, his awareness, which is the masculine, right? He loses his masculine. Her feminine can't trust. So she should let him know. She should. I've had partners in the past, I had an agreement that if I lost awareness during intimacy, during lovemaking, I would allow them to smack me across the face. Because the feminine heart is so sensitive, it can feel it right away.
Mm-hmm.
The masculine heart is not as sensitive, or it can be trained to be, but it usually is not, right? And so to have like a faith wakes you up.
It's pretty, you just drop. That'll definitely wake you up.
Yeah. And it's really, it's actually one of the things that I'll have men do together is train each other to because men don't recognize that. I'll have men train each other to recognize when their consciousness drops, when their awareness lapses. Because men don't realize that that has an impact on other beings, particularly sensitive beings, like more feminine ones, right? So I'll have men train each other to like wake up to the fact that their awareness has dropped. Because that is really good training, because what that does is it creates a continuity of awareness, continuity of presence. And that is something that's trustworthy to surrender to. Anything less than that should not be surrendered to. And so if a feminine partner doesn't, you know, speak up or emote or respond to the drop of presence, like, you're not serving your partner. You're letting them get away with their habitual mind wandering or closure or self-referencing. So it's really, I want to make that really clear. Like, feminine responsiveness is super important so that the masculine partner is aware of their impact, right? Now, what that might look like is, again, up to each individual, right? It doesn't have to be like, okay, we need to talk about this now. It could just be like a blah, or a smack, or a you know, like a scrunching of the face, or like something to get the masculine partner's awareness back to the fact that they've lost the moment, right? And that reestablishes that ability to be trustworthy, to like to have that presence to surrender to. Okay.
Right. Because like, if you were to just have a conversation every time, do you feel like that can be depolarizing? What do you feel?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it's much safer than using your embodiment to wake up your partner. I think it's much safer.
What do you mean by that?
So in every moment, like our partner or whoever we're relating with, like we can use our practice to wake them up, to open them, to create more and more connection with them. And sometimes it's useful to go into a conversation about things, right? But other times that's just the safe move and you're just looping through stories, right? And you will, you know, whatever, depolarize or just lose the moment. And, you know, all of a sudden you're just talking about what happened instead of being with what's happening. So instead you might, yeah, I don't know, you might do anything to wake your partner up. That's where art comes in. It's like, you might laugh or cry or, you know, wave your arms around or smack them or like spin around until they're like, what are you doing? And you're just like, I love you. And then they laugh and then boom, you're back and, you know, you're together again, right? So that's where we can use our practice, our own embodiment to first of all, get out of our own pattern, which is to like, use our mind to, you know, talk about things and reference things and all that, and wake up our partner, like be deeper than that, be more than that.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. You had another question, but I feel like there's something else on your tongue right now.
I feel as well an important piece of that, and for our listeners, just so it doesn't get construed, what's the difference between that and, I guess, like emotionally projecting?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, here's a fun difference. That is using your embodiment for your partner. Emotionally projecting is using it for you. Like you're laughing or crying or, you know, scrunching your face or yawning or, you know, like you're doing that for your partner. Like you're doing that for something deeper than you. Mm. Right. I think a lot of particularly women who come into this space, you know, they see like, oh, the feminine is expressive. And so she just expressed everything. And like, that's true, but sometimes it's still just habit, right? It's still just like, you know, are we expressing that thing to create deeper intimacy and closeness, union, or are we doing it to protect ourselves or to prove a story to ourselves, right? And those are important distinctions.
Yeah, absolutely. Otherwise, I feel it can also be a lot on the other partner to be receiving that all of the time. It's almost like like an emotional bomb coming up all the time. So I think that's also why it is really important to do that inner work, to notice our patterns, to notice the stories that continually come up. And this is also something that I do for like women that I work with, is noting down the things that come up, especially before a woman's bleed, because it's often during that time that we've got a lot of stories and shadows and wounds that come up. Mm-hmm. And then that gets infused into the relationship or onto our partner.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So for the other question, it was, grounding for men, like coming into a space of deeper leadership. And holding that pose, what are some, I guess, tips or directions that you can give for maybe a man who's wanting to start in this work and drop into that, maybe for the first time, maybe they've never heard of it, maybe they're just hearing of this now, and they're wanting to explore that deeper in holding their woman or a feminine partner and leading them deeper in a relationship and intimacy?
Yeah. Well, that's a tall task. But I mean, the first place really is your body. Right, our body is the thing that is constantly communicating, and most of the time it's communicating unconscious closure. And so for men in particular to be grounded in their lower body, to be strong in their spine and soft in the front, like just that, particularly softening like the tongue, the heart, the belly, the perineum, that along with the strength of the spine creates trustability in a more masculine body. It creates presence. And most of the time our presence is kinked, like it's kinked in unconscious tension, it's kinked in our thoughts, it's kinked in our sexual fantasies. And so probably the fastest way to masculine presence is like ground, strong spine, soft front, and then breathe. Like breathe in that place. And every time tension comes up, come back to soft, like soft yet strong. And that on a moment by moment basis has an impact. Particularly, again, most men don't realize this. I've never had the experience of it, but their presence moment by moment is impacting those around them. And so a really good practice is to do that, like whether you're in a conversation or you're talking with your partner, whatever, round, strong back, soft front, and notice the impact on them. Do they smile a little bit? Do they sigh? Do they move their hair? Like notice the impact of your level of embodiment. And that is a path that is fucking endless, but it's a good place to start.
Yeah, absolutely. I felt in my own body as well. Someone who is connected to their breath or has a personal practice, they don't even have to be you know, in this work of polarity or masculine and feminine, just as long as I've got a practice and they're spending time opening their body, connecting to themselves, and they're in that, I can feel that really deeply in them. And it creates a resonance in my body. Like, I feel grounded, I feel rested. Like, even in this moment, it feels like easy for me to have this conversation because it feels grounded.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I was just going to add on the piece around practice that's so important, because like, it is a moment by moment thing, but your awareness is strengthened over time, right? Like, your awareness is it's always there, but your ability to be present is a muscle, and it's a more masculine one. And so for men who want to create more masculine, like they want to accentuate their masculine energy, presence is that. And so things like meditation, even, you know, you could work out to a degree, or qigong, things like that, like they create a level of that like still strength, or that like soft, strong presence that a more feminine body, or really just anybody who's sensitive, can feel. And what that feels like is trust. Right? Groundedness creates trust. And so over, like, that's one of the best things men can do, is do that over time, like day after day, put themselves into positions to create that in their body. And it will have an effect. It does.
Absolutely. That's what the practice is all about. I feel it's a continual motion of doing that. And I feel this podcast is also, everything I do is all based around sexuality as well. So how do you feel that this relates in the bedroom, right? Having a practice like this, how have you seen this in maybe your own clients, and how it translates to creating deeper intimacy in sex and with the feminine in that space?
Yeah. Well, I mean, sex is it's like the ancient expression, and it's the place where all this stuff comes together. Right, it's the place where, you know, we're most naked, right? We're most out of our roles, or our, hopefully, like we get to be, I guess, out of our roles or our patterns or our conditioning, and so that essence in us gets to meet. And what I've experienced, and what a lot of people have experienced, is that when one person is sort of claiming the role of the masculine and feminine, and then the other is claiming the other, the opposite pole, that creates the most sort of delicious union, where sex becomes much more than physical. It becomes spiritual, it becomes sacred. And, you know, so that's one thing. And that's a beautiful thing that I hope everybody fucking experiences.
Me too.
I think a lot of the world's problems would be solved by that kind of experience. But I think, you know, like, just to speak for men, one of the things that so many men struggle with is addiction, right? Addiction to porn, addiction to ejaculation. And these practices, like we were just talking about, like a presence practice, meditation practice, they allow us to kind of relax past the need of that is our habit, right? So we can have more presence that allows us to last longer, that allows us to have a more fulfilling experience for ourselves and for our partner. Like, essentially, these practices get us beyond the habit of ourself, right? The habit of our habit, and what is underneath that is something that's almost unspeakable, but it's so much more fulfilling, right? And that, you know, lovemaking is the expression of that in the deepest way, right? It is a being saying, "Take me, like I'm yours," and another being saying, you know, "You're mine, I'm taking you." And when it's the place that we get to kind of play at that edge in a way that, again, when all those other things are there, the safety, the equality, the respect, the sensitivity, the like all the groundedness, the presence, the trust, when all that's there, we get to play in the deepest way. And that's a fucking amazing thing. So yeah, that's what I would say about that.
Yeah, I feel that impasses really translate into the bedroom. How we are in our own bodies, that inspires us in the bedroom, and it really shifts the dynamic completely. The more safety we cultivate for ourselves and the more intimacy we cultivate with ourselves, the deeper our intimacy and our sex can really dive into. That's why, yeah, I cannot stress enough like how important that personal practice is and really coming into that space. And for maybe, say, a woman who is with someone who hasn't yet gone into this space of practicing, maybe, because you said that, you know, a lot of the issues around sexuality and that practice is, you know, the addiction to the patterns and ejaculation and the overuse of porn and the overconsumption of that and how it's programmed us, essentially. From my own perspective, I believe that it's really created this disconnect between us and a real human in front of us. Let's just say that a woman is wanting to invite her man into more of this work. Do you think that's possible? Would that emasculate him? What is your views on that?
This is one of the questions I get asked the most. I don't know if I've found a good answer yet, because for really to take a strong, for really to have a strong impact on a man, he has to be there at his own volition, right? He has to undertake it on his own accord, and nobody can tell him to do it. It might help, but he has to like get onto the mat because he wants to be there, right? And so, and there's, you know, the majority of this world is made up of women, because for one, women are more relational beings. Like, there's an aspect of men that I don't often see get recognized. Like, men are okay just not relating, like, because it's a more masculine thing. Like faith. There's no relationship in space. It takes objects, it takes those stars, it takes the light for there to be relationship, right? So just naturally, men are not as inclined to undertake these kinds of things, but they want to. Like, there is a part of them that really wants to, like, essentially experience deeper parts of themselves, that wants to be more free in how they relate to their partner. And so for women who want to invite their men into that, I think, you know, do so in a way that is inviting, that is encouraging, that is appreciating, that is honoring. Like, do so with those qualities, and whatever you do, if you do them with that kind of spirit, it will be received. And it will be received much better than in a way that is like demeaning or criticizing or comparing. Because even if your man, you know, takes, you know, goes to that workshop or ties up with that coach or whatever it is, if it's because he's doing it to please you, both of you will be unhappy. Right? So whatever, like, however you do it, whether you share a book that's meaningful to you or enroll in a course together, like, let your yearning for more, that's really what it is. Like, women want more from their men. Right? They want more presence, more ground, more trustability, more sensitivity, more intimacy. Let your yearning for more be an invitation to him. Step up and say, like, yes, I want that too, rather than, okay, I'll do that so that, you know, you stop hounding me, or so that I make you happy, right?
Yeah, because then essentially, I guess, he loses himself in that, and he's no longer I guess, in his like real core of who he is, if he's just doing it to someone else. I would assume that that's not comfortable for any man.
No. And, you know, I say that, I think I'll add the addendum that like any opportunity for a man to get into this kind of work is a good one. And so I guess I also want to say like, do whatever the fuck it takes. I think that's a good thing to throw in there. And, you know, everything else I said.
Do it for a higher purpose. Essentially. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do it from love. Do it from love.
Do whatever it takes and do it from love. Yeah. Because you know, I've experienced many men who are there because their partners are mad at them. Mm. Right? Or they're because their partners are threatening their relationship to end if nothing changes, right? And you know that they're fucking there. They're at the thing, right? They're at the retreat or they're at the workshop or whatever it is. But sometimes I don't trust how sustainable that is. You know?
Yeah, there definitely, I feel, has to be some part of them that is 100%, you know, like I'm in this for me as well.
Yeah.
I, even with my own relationship, like my current partner that I have now, he's delved into this work because I was doing a lot of the work already as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when we first met, I was reading Finding God Through Sex by David Deida and sort of like spun everything off as well from there. So it was like an invitation for him. I didn't necessarily ask him to do it. It's just something that he started going into, but he's got a code in him that is, you know, I want to do this work. I want to develop. I want to grow. I want to evolve. Right. And to me, that's like super sexy as well, because he's already there. He wants to be in that space of growing.
Right.
That's really beautiful to see.
Yeah.
And so back to that point of inviting him forward through the feminine, I feel when we do it through a very criticizing or a close-hearted way, or we're like essentially projecting like, you know, you're not good enough as you are, is that often the message that men will get underneath that?
That's what it feels like to anybody. That's what it feels like to anybody when we're trying to change them.
Hmm.
It's as simple as that. We're not okay with how things are, and we want to change. And whether you're a man or woman, if you're on the other side of that, it will feel like, on some level, who I am is not enough.
Mm.
Which is, of course, the core wound that everybody has. And so, you know, you can imagine where that goes. But the thing is that the feminine, particularly how it expresses in women in relationships, more than I think just women in general, the feminine in general, is it's always yearning for more, right? So of course women want more from their men. It's the feminine. Like he could go to every fucking workshop and you read every book and be a master at everything, and still there will be something, right? There will be something to want more of, because there always is. It's fucking endless.
Mm.
And how we go about that, it's like, you know, is it a yearning? Like, are you yearning in a way that's like inviting him forward? Or are you, you know, wanting him to change in a subtle way so that you feel better, right? So that you're more satisfied. And it comes back to that thing of like, are we doing the thing for something greater than us? Or are we doing it for our habit? Are we doing it for our pattern?
Mm. Yeah, I feel if there's one thing that the listeners can take away from that, it's that piece. Like, are you doing it for something higher? Or are we doing it for our own gain, essentially?
Mm.
Mm. With that, so I feel with... And so I see that a lot in my work, the shadow feminine. It is really important to do that work around, you know, what goes on for us, what we're really expecting, and where that comes back to in our childhood wounding. Do you think that there's a link between, what is your, what's the word I'm looking for? Your perception around how we project our childhood onto our partners, essentially, especially the masculine and women and the father wound, especially. I'd love to hear about that.
It's going to happen. It's already happening. It's probably almost always happening. And in those moments of, you know, what data would call like those third stage moments.
Mm-hmm. And what is the third stage? Just for our listeners that might not know.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So first, just really quickly, David Data, super brilliant, genius teacher of this kind of work, has three stages that he talks about, all of which you can throw away if they're not helpful, but a lot of people find them helpful. So the first stage is basically it's me. It's all about me. And this is, this could happen in a moment or this could happen over time, but essentially any kind of energetic of selfishness, right? Where our actions, there's no sensitivity to their impact, right? So first stage me, second stage is we. So now it's like, okay, I'm aware, there's another being here. Like there's a sensitivity that's developed, right? And so, you know, first stage, he would always reference like the macho, like the 1950s macho tough guy, right? Who's just out for himself, you know, is abusive to women. Like, you know, the wife is submissive and doing all the work at home. And like, he's just out there on his own. Like, you know, it's like the picture of selfishness in a way. The second stage, man, is like is an evolution. It's like the sensitive new age hippie guy, right? Who's aware of his heart and his heart is open and he's sensitive to other beings' hearts and to their emotions and to his emotions. And it's an evolution from that first stage sort of selfishness to a sort of second stage relational equality, right? It's almost like, those relationships that are like 50-50, where everything's split right down the middle. Like, you know, the bill is split 50-50, the rent is split 50-50. It's like everything is we're equal, right? So we gotta, you know, everything has to be shared right halfway down. That's second stage. And it's like necessary, beautiful. It's an evolution from first stage dynamics, but it's still limited because it's still about you and me. Right. It's still about like these identifications of these separate beings that are, you know, have to be 50-50. Right. A third stage is more like God or something greater than me or we. It's like how love wants to flow in the moment. Like that is the third stage. And there's no self in that. Which is why really when you were like, what would it look like, you know, for the feminine surrender? Surrender is like the third stage practice, the third stage moment. So there's no self in it. There's no like, this is what I'm doing. This is what you're doing. It's just happening. It's happening through us. And so there's no thought. There's no thought. There's no self-referencing. And so in those moments, there's no self. There's no self. And so if there's no self, there's no story and there's no history and there's no projection of our childhood wounds. That's a tall fucking task, right? It's a great place to aim for. It's a great place to taste and to touch and to hopefully create more of. But, you know, if we're being realistic, most of us are not living in that way all the time. In fact, most of us not living that way ever. If we're lucky, you know, a little bit. I think the moral of the story is that we all have been impacted by our childhood, and there is a sort of an archetypal dynamic that happens between the daughter and the father, as well as the mother and the son, that will show up in relationship, right? And so, if we're not examining our story, if we're not examining our psychology, we will take our mommy issues or our daddy issues and we will see them on our partner. because what happens is that it happened when we were a kid, some wound happened. And as soon as our sexuality came online, it kind of runs through those wounds, because sexuality is like the closest thing to the intimacy of mother and father that we'll probably ever experience beyond those two relationships, right? So we look to it to fulfill those original wounds. We look to our sexual relationships to fulfill those wounds that it could never really fulfill, right? And so for men, usually that's the relationship with their mother and the wounds that were created there. And for women, it's their father. And yeah, I mean, it depends on every person and what their unique experience is. But I think probably the shortest way through it is like to recognize what those wounds are for each of us and to take responsibility for them. And do so as soon as we can, right? Moment by moment, doing so now. And then after an argument, you recognize that you were just projecting onto them from stuff from your childhood. Awesome. Take responsibility for it then. Reconnect then. Because it's going to happen. And the thing that's really important is like how quickly we can become aware of it and then take responsibility for it. Right.
Yeah.
That kind of goes for any thing, any stuff that comes up in relationship. But yeah, for women in particular, looking at the relationship with their father, like what was the, you know, a great question is like, what was the thing you really wanted but didn't receive?
Oofed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You take that question and you go, okay, let's say it was presence or love or physical touch, right? Could be anything. Usually what we do is we take that thing that we didn't receive and we find all the ways our partner is not giving that to us, right? We try and get that thing from the world around us. It also is the thing that becomes our gift oftentimes. It's also the thing we try and give most, right? But when you look at it like that, you can recognize like, oh, I'm mad at my partner because, or like I often will get mad at my partner because he doesn't look at me when he gets home or something like that. And that instantly takes me back to when I was 5 and my dad would come home and he would not say hello to me and he'd go straight to his office, right? So our wounds are timeless, right? Our psychology is timeless. And like it doesn't know the experience of past and present and future. It's just all happening right now. And so to kind of come back, like this would be more of a second stage thing, right? This is like therapy and like that kind of stuff has to do with healing past stuff, like healing our wounds and then relating with them, with our partner, relating to our partner's wounds, sharing about our own, like bringing each other in so that you can learn to be better communicators and lovers, like love the person in the way that they deeply yearn to be loved and for you to be loved in the way that you want to be loved. Like all of that is super fucking important and creates the foundation for us to be able to play at the kind of third stage edge, right? Where, you know, everybody is cared for in the deepest way and is safe in their own way and it's loved and respected in a mutual way so that we can like, okay, once all that's set, then we're free to go beyond ourselves, like go beyond our personal story.
Because it needs a mat, right?
Yes. Yes. Or at the very least, they'll be cared for in a deeply loving way. If something, you know, if sensitivity is dropped or if presence is dropped, like you can come back to meeting needs. Like coming back to essentially it's the nervous system. Like coming back to the nervous system, grounding that, because that's where it all lives. So anyway, that was a big fucking question to ask. Hopefully I got like a little speck of it answered.
Yeah, I feel like that explained it really well. And we are, you know, there's been so many studies, we are attachment-based creatures as well. You know, it's literally how we've grown up from the womb, even, like, you know, babies are sometimes even taken away from their mothers straight away out of the womb. And that's a lot on our bodies. That's a lot on our hearts as little tiny humans that require that attachment. So of course, you know, after having that in our body for so long and other experiences, it is quite obvious that that can carry into our relationships and how we attach to others. Definitely.
And that's why it's so important to the question you asked earlier, like, why do people get pushback around the concept of surrender? It's like, because it's touching on such core stuff, right? And so that is why it's so important to go places where you can be held in a safe, loving container with other people to practice opening beyond our story, to opening beyond, you know, the habit that we've created since childhood. And again, to do so in a safe, loving, caring way, where you can just meet your edge, right? And you go maybe just a little bit beyond it and like see what that's like. Maybe recognize that, you know, we're not so fragile as we like to think, or we have a lot more capacity for openness and love and presence than we let ourselves on to believe. If you're not doing that, then all of this stuff is just mental masturbation. Like, it's just an idea. People argue about it all day long, but like, have they ever had an experience of it, like in a deep sort of sacred way? If not, then it's, I don't know, I'm not that interested in talking about it because it's just an idea.
Yeah. And just turns into projections of, you know, what we, it's an assumption, essentially. It's an assumption. It's you're not deep in it, so we haven't yet experienced it. Therefore, we've only got this limited ideal version of it. And really, that doesn't compare, in my opinion anyway, to how it really feels in the body.
Yeah. Yeah. Literally. That's in Buddhism, you know, there's three different kinds of wisdom. There's the wisdom that you're told or taught by somebody else. Mm-hmm. There's the wisdom that you read from, you know, scriptures. And then the highest wisdom is the wisdom of your own experience. That's the wisdom to really trust. Like, that's the deepest wisdom. That's the one that sinks in there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I find myself hesitant these days to be in the social media conversation because around these kinds of topics, because, well, for one, there's not a lot of nuance in social media. Just like, you know, you get your caption and like people are just gonna take all their projections and put it onto that thing. Mm-hmm. And you know, have at it. And it's like, it's just so limited. And there's, you know, thankfully there's places that people are going these days, like people are really taking these things on and practicing them and bringing them into their life, and it's fucking beautiful. And we need more of it so that people can have direct experience of these kinds of things and really feel it in their body and, you know, then decide for themselves what's true, what's not true.
Yeah, absolutely. It's sort of like, you know, of course, take what resonates, leave the rest, but these experiences can be deeply, deeply fucking healing for all of us because they do go back down to our roots and our traumas and our core wounds. It's just, yeah, it's like a relational, that's what I'm looking for.
Self-development.
What?
I said washing machine.
A relational washing machine. You get thrown around a few times, but you really come out.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely feel you on that one. Beautiful. Yeah. Well, we're getting close to the end and I just want to drop in a last couple of questions. And first of all, thank you for joining and, you know, giving us your wisdom and sharing your embodiment, your codes and everything that you've moved through in this space. I definitely find that, looking through your work as well, you are very embodied in this. And that's why I was like, you know, come on the show. Let's definitely have a chat about it. So thank you.
You're so welcome.
And my last question is, if you were to basically fly like a message in the sky, right? You could say anything you wanted to. You had a big plane and like huge letters. What message would you put in the sky and why?
You know, the first thing that comes to mind is how would you love if today was your last day to live? How would you love if today was your last day to live?
Mm-hmm.
Because that question brings us, I think, the closest to the kind of third stage moment that we're talking about,
mm-hmm.
where we're no longer worried about our past or our future, and we're much more involved in, like, this was my last moment with this person here in front of me. Like, how would my heart move? How would I speak? How would I hold them? It creates a freedom beyond how it'd be a freedom beyond habit.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is what I'm interested in. Like, that's what I do with people. That's what moves me. That's what I feel called to do. And, you know, this language around masculine and feminine is helpful in getting us there in a certain way. But really, that's the essence of it, is like, how would we love, how would we be if we were so free? Like, and that question to me gets us there. I'm gonna have a pretty fucking awesome impact on whoever saw that massive flying banner.
Absolutely, definitely. And say that one more time, just for our listeners.
How would you love if today was your last day to live?
How would you love if today was your last day to live? Super potent. I'm sure a lot of people would definitely change how they moved and interacted in the world. That's for sure.
I hope so.
Amazing. And if we want to get more of you, if people want to join in on your work, are there any current offerings that you've got at the moment, and what are your social media links as well? And I'll also put them in the show notes.
Cool. Yeah, you can find me most easily on Instagram now, McGrath Isbell. Right now, my only offerings are one-on-one coaching. And that's the one-on-one coaching container where we dive into all these things and more. And as well, I work with couples. So one-on-two containers are also available for couples who want to bring this stuff alive into their relationships.
Amazing. Beautiful. Is that by application as well, I'm guessing, or is it just on your website?
Yeah. Application. Yeah, you can find it through my website, or you can message me and we can have a conversation.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for joining in and, yeah, for coming on here. Really appreciate
it. You're so welcome. Yeah, thanks for having me.
And that, my loves, brings us to the end of this episode. Wow, there was definitely some potent messages in that, and I really hope that it served you in whichever way that you needed today. And these conversations are only going to get bigger, wider, more expansive, because they really do show us the nuances of relating and many of the different facets that we can encounter and experience when we are relating consciously with another or in the practice of polarity. So again, if you loved this episode, and if you have been loving these episodes, please feel free to leave a review on the iTunes podcast. It would help me get this out to more women, and that is the absolute intention for this space.